I spent January, February, and March of this year, 2022, full-time fundraising. I outreached 400 VCs in total. I had, I think, 80 meetings, and we did not close our round. And it was one of the hardest periods of my entrepreneurial life.
Welcome to Venturing Women, a podcast about female founders, investors, and ecosystem enablers.
Hi, this is Dara Komkalova. The pandemic seemed to have made remote work a commonplace. It even felt like the world would never be the same again. Yet some companies, including tech giants like Google, announced returning their workforce back to offices. Others introduce a hybrid mode that requires presence in the office a few days a week. Remote work, inevitable for many in times of crisis, turned out to be hard to embrace when this crisis dissipated, or sort of dissipated. Why? And how can we truly reap its benefits? I discussed this topic with Sarah Hawley, the CEO and founder of Growmotely. Growmotely is the world's first end-to-end platform that facilitates conscious companies in hiring equally conscious remote professionals of all nationalities into long-term remote jobs. Driven by her passion for the freedom that remote work provides professionals and companies alike, Sarah is trailblazing the space as a thought leader and creator where remote work, conscious leadership, and personal and professional growth intersect. Before Growmotely, Sarah started and successfully sold multiple companies for seven-figure sums. She's mother to one-year-old Luca and author of the book Conscious Leadership, A Journey from Ego to Heart. Hi, Sarah. So nice to have you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Daria.
Thanks for joining. It sounds like a very natural thing to talk about remote work in 2022, but the world was a different place in 2016. That's when you changed the setup of your company, Grow My Team, to all remote. What inspired this decision?
Well, yeah, actually, it was 2014 when I first started turning my companies remote, and Grow My Team was actually born of that. So I had financial planning businesses previously, and around 2014, I started feeling like I'd been 5 years as a founder and I loved what I did, but I felt more trapped than I wanted. This idea of becoming an entrepreneur was all about freedom and being the creator of my own destiny and all of that. And I was going to the office at 7 a.m. and staying there until 8 or 9 at night and not traveling as much as I wanted. And travel for me is just, it's lifeblood. It's such a big part of who I am. And so I started, and I wanted to move to the US. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? You can probably hear I'm Australian. So I thought, what am I going to do to create more freedom? And I had heard about people working with teams from different parts of the world. And it was pretty obscure back then, but I decided to give it a go and start turning the company remote and hiring people from different parts of the world and just kind of opening up the way that we were doing things. So it was a transition. I would say like 2014 and 15 were a transition period. We got rid of our office. We had a co-working space for a while. We started hiring people in other parts of the world. And along the way, I formed the company Grow My Team, which was a global recruitment company. And the reason why I started that company was because I was open to hiring talent anywhere in the world, but I didn't know how to find them. So it's one thing to say, yeah, I could hire someone from Egypt, but how do I even find that person? And so we basically built, myself and three co-founders, a small recruitment company that had a global focus so that they could find these remote team members anywhere in the world for us. And that was really the genesis of what ended up now becoming Growmotely. So when I sold my financial planning company in 2018, I thought, what am I most passionate about? And it was remote work. The journey that I had been on had been really transformative for me as an individual and a leader, and it had been equally transformative for the people in my team and our culture. We had had to unwind all of the conditioning around working 9 to 5 and going to an office. And we did it in a world that didn't understand us, you know. So we had to be very brave and courageous to kind of keep doing the things that felt right for us and keep that faith when everybody else was looking at me like, what are you? I don't even understand how you run a company and you're in Bali and you're in wherever. I never really associated with like the digital nomad thing, even though I guess I was one. because a lot of digital nomads were freelancers or just it was just them working with their little business.
Managing themselves, and you had to manage a team.
Yeah, we had a whole team of people and we were growing companies that I sold three companies that way, that we built them and scaled them and sold them. And so we were doing things that most of the world wasn't doing. And so, yeah, back to 2018, sold my financial planning company and thought, what's the thing that really lights me up? And it was remote work. And I thought, it's got to be the future. Like, it just has to be. I know that the rest of the world doesn't get it, but we there's no need for us to be in offices anymore. And so I thought I'm going to throw myself in to grow my team, which is this global recruitment company, and just see what happens. And I had bought my co-founders out of that small business along the way because none of them were very interested. They were like, this is a small business. It's a distraction. It's not growing. And there was some intuitive pull there the whole time to buy them out, even though the company was like losing money and wasn't really viable on paper. I just trusted my gut. And about halfway through 2019, the idea of Growmotely came to me in that, you know, what it is now, which is essentially a managed marketplace where companies anywhere in the world can find and hire people anywhere in the world, but really focused on culture first hiring and matching people and companies based on culture fit and alignment. And yeah, it's just been a magical journey ever since. Obviously, the pandemic was really good for us. And I say that with compassion for all of the suffering that people experienced. But I think we're comfortable enough now as humanity to look and say, you know, there was some really much needed change that very disruptive period of time has helped us to usher in and step into things that perhaps should have been looked at before. But it probably took something like that for us to really shake up the foundations of how we thought things have to be. As we see now, I mean, people do not want to go back to offices. They want to work remotely. They want to have the lifestyle that they want and have work integrate into that instead of the other way around.
You mentioned that Growmotely is much more than just a marketplace. It's also about the culture. When you look at the company owners and leaders who hire on Growmotely, can you pinpoint any similarities in their profiles? What kind of leaders are they? And what type of company culture do they usually build?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've been connecting dots on this the last just few weeks, actually. I mean, we've always been a very heart-led company, very passionate, mission-driven, and we've attracted a lot of other companies, founders in leaders that are similar and also on the professional side, very conscious, very aware, very brave, courageous types. And I thought to some degree that's because of who I am and who the brand is and what we're putting out in the world. And I think that's definitely true. But what I'm also seeing is to embrace and step into this fully remote world requires a level of open-mindedness, curiosity, pioneering spirit, and an ability to kind of unpack the way that we've been told everything needs to be. So if I was to pinpoint the mindset of this type of leader that's attracted into Growmotely, is a leader that understands that culture and the happiness of their people and the alignment of their people actually does determine the success of the company overall.
How does happiness of employees translate into business outcomes for leaders who know they want to build this kind of culture of conscious leadership?
The way that I see it is you can create a high-performing culture through pressure. So you can put a lot of pressure on people, organize that pressure around deadlines and, you know, everything is important and stressful, and you can do that and you will get a level of performance for sure in that. But you will also over time start to get high attrition. People will get burned out. They will need to leave the company. Those who stay will be staying in like a very stretched, burnt out kind of state. And ultimately it starts to degrade the culture. If you are able to embrace more like engagement, happiness, alignment, you will create the same level of performance, but it's coming from a place of flow. It's coming from a place of heart rather than that kind of pressure cooker. And so people are not as likely to burn out. They're not as likely to want to leave the company. So you're getting greater longevity. And they're also going to treat the customers better, of course. They're going to treat everything better. You know yourself, if you're happy and thriving in your life, you probably treat your partner better just generally. You're like happy to see them at the end of the day or whatever it might be. Whereas if you've had a really stressful, pressure-filled day, it's really easy for that to spill over into your partner or your friends or what have you.
I agree with you that not everyone will want to come back to the office and the world will not be the same from this standpoint. However, despite the fact that vast amounts of people have worked remotely during the pandemic, some companies have announced that they're bringing their workforce back to the offices, including tech giants like Google. Mm-hmm. Others introduced salary reductions for employees who relocated during the pandemic and won't be able to work in the office. Why do you think this is happening? And what possibly hinders a complete transition to remote work, even in the tech industry?
I think to some degree, change is difficult. And so I think there's just a natural element of like wanting to go back to what we knew and what was comfortable. I think long-term office leases, quite frankly, are driving some of it. I'm really curious to see what happens when we're 3, 5, 7 years out and some of those big office leases are expiring and whether those companies will be holding as strong as they are right now to this desperate need to bring people back into the office. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around that people can perform on their own, even though, and I think this is one of people's biggest bugbears, is like they proved themselves during the pandemic. So why do we have to go back? But there's still a lot of what I would call managers, not leaders, who are convinced that, you know, if people are given this freedom to live and work and be where they want to be, that they won't perform as highly. And I mean, I know that's absolutely not true, but it still seems to be a very ingrained thing.
Is that because we don't have enough data about that yet, or is it something else?
Maybe. I mean, I think people are just like, what I would say is like, are you happy yourself as a manager? It does take evolution as a person. It certainly did for me to let go of my need to control and micromanage what was going on around me within my organization and allow people to step into a more trusted, empowered way of being. And there is an aspect of that that's a leap of faith.
If I'm a founder and I'm entertaining an idea of building a remote team, what would be your advice on where to start?
It is really cool to put a job advert up on a platform like Remotely, where there's a global audience of really remote first centric professionals, and see what comes. See what comes to you and be prepared to open your mind to the type of talent that is out there. I mean, that's a practical tip for, you know, actually hiring and finding people. But I also think that just from a mindset and the organizational structure, it's really just sitting with and starting to unpack and probably reading materials by companies and founders who have done it before, but starting to unpack like what are my fears with this? Like what are the things that I'm afraid of and what could actually be possible in this kind of environment?
What are the typical fears that leaders and company owners have about a remote setup?
I think the biggest fear that I hear is, how will I know what my team are doing? In fact, it's actually pretty obvious. Like, is the work being done? Are you meeting deadlines? Is your finance person on top of the bookkeeping and producing the reports in a timely manner? Like, whatever it is that each person is supposed to do, are they doing it? And it shouldn't be that difficult for the leader of an organization to be able to see that the parts are moving and everything is kind of being delivered as it needs to be. And one of the things that we lean into is just this constant open ongoing feedback in place of, you know, regular official performance reviews. And the reason being is saving up for 6 months or a year to tell someone that they haven't been performing, you know, it's really difficult. And I imagine being on the receiving end of that and thinking, why didn't you tell me 6 months ago instead of letting me keep not performing for 6 months? I could have like grown in that time. I could have evolved. I could have understood what was needed of me. Yet here we are. And I feel like I've really let you down for a long time, not just once. And so I thought of it like that at some point. It just kind of clicked to me. And so I just get on top of it right away. I noticed this back in, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, probably more like 15 years ago. managers that were of the previous generation to me would have a lot of fear around these performance reviews. They would become this big deal and they weren't used to or comfortable giving negative feedback. And I noticed, this was actually in my dad's company. I used to work with my dad. I noticed I would be friends with some of the younger people who were my age and they were excited about their careers and they were like thriving and wanting to grow and evolve. And they were like thirsty for feedback. They were like, I don't even know if I'm doing what they want me to do. Like I show up every day and I'm trying and I have to wait until July 1st to do my review to find out if I'm doing well. And I would hear on the other side, the leadership just being like deliberating about how they were going to deliver this feedback to this person. And I'm just sitting there thinking, all they want is some feedback. That's all they want. They just want to know, like, are we doing well? Are we not? Am I hitting what you would expect? Am I exceeding or am I falling short? And like, tell me so that I can figure it out. And I think that's definitely something really true of millennials, which is my generation. I'm obviously at the very older end of it, but millennials and the next generation just wanting to do well and wanting to achieve and wanting to experience all that our careers have to offer and desiring that feedback. So I've lent into that, having kind of seen a little bit of that old world and seen how it wasn't really serving anyone. And the company was frustrated and the team member didn't know. And this kind of environment where I'm working for 3, 6, 12 months without knowing how somebody is feeling, like that erodes trust really significantly. I mean, you think about it in a romantic relationship, if you were constantly doing something that your partner was struggling with and they didn't tell you for 6 months or a year or 2 years, it really erodes the trust of like, wow, you know, why can't we just have an open conversation about this so that we can start to get back in alignment?
Let's go back to Grow Remotely as a business. As a growing business, and a growing business usually needs investment. I'm very curious how you approached raising funds. Where did you start your search for the right investors?
Yeah, so early on when I came up with the idea, or I mean, I feel more like I channeled, you know, the idea, it came to me, but that's neither here nor there. Early on when the idea came to me, I basically knew that it was going to be a tech platform. I knew that it would take significant capital upfront to get it going, that it would be different to service businesses that I had started in the past where you can kind of start small and grow organically. And so I reached out to my network essentially. So I put together a pitch deck and I figured out how much money I would need and what I would use it for. And then I reached out to my network. I had mentors, advisors, people that I had known through, it was almost a 10-year career as a founder at that point, and said, you know, I'm doing this company. It feels like a really big thing. It's a huge opportunity and it's going to require some capital. And I would like to invite you to be on the journey with me. And I was able to raise, so we raised a small round early on, which was right before the pandemic, of $350,000. And then we continued raising, we raised some more money last year. So we've raised a total of $1.2 million to date from angel investors. That was basically my network and extended network. So once I started having conversations with investors, then they would introduce me to someone else or what have you. Everyone in that first round I knew really, really well. The second round, a little bit less well, like a bit more of an extended network, but still through the network. And then late last year, I decided, okay, I feel like it's time to raise what I would call a seed round. We wanted to raise 5 million and I decided it was time to start talking to VCs. So I spent January, February, and March of this year, 2022, full-time fundraising. I outreached 400 VCs in total. I had, I think, 80 meetings. And we did not close our round. And it was one of the hardest periods of my entrepreneurial life. It was really, really difficult. It was very hard to keep my energy positive when I was receiving no after no after no. And all of the success stories tell you that that's the way it goes. You got to receive, there's different statistics, but 100 no's to get the yes, or 10 no's to get the yes, or whatever it was. But I reached a point at the end of March where I just felt like this is not in any way serving the company anymore. Like my energy is so drained and I'm so exhausted and I do not enjoy any of this. And I feel like all of the pressure and everything that I was feeling was bleeding into the company, because it always does. Like, whatever challenges you're having in your organization, look inward first. They are coming from you at some level. And the sooner we can take ownership of that, the better. But that's a different conversation. But I just had such hyper awareness that the more and more my energy got drained, the more the energy was being drained from the company. And so I recalibrated with my leadership team at the end of March, and we decided, let's raise a smaller round now. Let's raise through crowdfunding. So we have a crowdfunding campaign live on Republic right now. Let's raise from our community, because we have an incredible community, 30,000 strong, of conscious companies and professionals all around the world who really love what we're doing, who are really engaged in what we're doing and want to be part of the journey. And let's continue to raise from angels. So we're planning to raise up to 2 million right now between the crowdfunding campaign, where we can raise 1,070,000 is the amount, and then an additional million from angel investors. And let's get to break even as quickly as we can and into profit, at which point, you know, we'll have a lot of different decisions that we can make moving forward with our capital requirements and the company that we're building. And it was so difficult. You know, it's the hardest thing I ever went through. It was really hard not to feel like a victim, or, you know, that victim energy that this is so hard, it's as unfair, why is this not happening for me? You know, there were times when I doubted myself as a founder, when I doubted the company, the idea, the model, the way we had I mean, I just literally, that process allowed every doubt and fear to rise to the surface. With every no came this doubt and fear, like, maybe this is not going to work. Maybe this is not the thing. But that never felt like truth. It was just a distraction. And I'm actually really grateful for it, because to look all of those doubts and fears in the face and work through them all has given me even more strength and courage and excitement and alignment for what we are building and what's ahead. I'm happy to share this part of the journey openly, because I don't know how many people talk about the challenge. And we often hear about when a company has closed their round, or we'll hear the story 5 years later or 10 years later when they're exiting of, yeah, it was really hard. But like, dropping into the reality of where we're at right now, like, we didn't raise the 5 mil that we wanted to raise. And so now we are hustling and flowing, just really embodying all that we have at our disposal as a team to build this company to break even and profit and grow from there. And it's really galvanized the team around what we're building. And as I said, it's allowed us to work through the fears and the doubts and get really aligned and on the same page. We also have become really creative, and we've started implementing a whole bunch of new stuff that we didn't implement in the first quarter because we were so distracted with trying to fundraise. And that's the other thing. It's so distracting. And on this journey, I realized being a funded company, you are always raising because the pros of it are you're able to achieve a lot more. You know, you can build out a team and spend money on things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to. So you can get further faster, but you're always going to butt up against the end of your runway and have to raise more money until, you know, hopefully some point down the track you get into profit and things start to shift. But there's a lot of pressure once you do raise money as well. And I could feel that pressure with every VC meeting I was having, of like, they wanted to know, like, what's next? When's the next round? What's the next valuation going to be? You know, where are you going to be in this amount of years? And while it's great to talk about all of those things and paint a picture and a vision and have some ideas, I mean, anyone who has been a founder knows that it's not a straight line. Like, we can do financial projections and models, and that's all great. It's nice to do that to make sure you have a viable opportunity here. But like, realistically, it never goes that way. Some of it even just felt like just crap. Like, am I meant to just sit here and tell you exactly what's going to happen along the way? Like, it just doesn't even feel truthful to me at some level. Like, I just know I want to build this amazing company that's got a positive impact on humanity and a positive impact on the planet. And I know it's a huge opportunity because so many people want it. And do you want to come on the journey with me?
Why didn't they want to come on the journey with you? What was their rationale to say no?
It's so interesting, because going through 3 months of it, at first I took all the feedback very to heart and very personally. And some VCs just drop off and never reply to you and you never hear from them ever again. And then other ones are really good. They just come back straight away. Like, it's not for us. I mean, sometimes it's just not in their thematic of what they're wanting to invest in at this time or what have you. And then you get other responses and feedback that are more specific, and it can be really helpful. But also, you have to remember that it's just their perspective. And one of the things that took me a while to understand is, like, they do not know my market. They do not know what we are building and what we're doing anywhere near to the level that I am. There's a lot of companies in the remote work HR space, none of whom are doing exactly what we're doing. But I do think to a degree we were getting lumped in with a lot of them, because one of the big common questions I was getting was, how are you going to win against XYZ company? And I don't operate that way. Like, I'm not doing this to win. We're doing this to usher in a new world and collaborate and co-create with everybody else who is ushering in this new world of work. So that was one that I always struggled to answer, because it just didn't feel like why I was doing it. But I also found that it's really important not to fixate too much on it, because I think after 12 years of being a founder, one of the main reasons why companies succeed or fail is the tenacity of the founder and the founding team. Like, are they willing to keep going and not give up when times are tough? And that's one thing that I have no question on for myself. And I know we'll make it work and we'll continue to pivot and evolve and shift and step into what is calling us and move away from what's not. Sometimes I think VCs can be just looking at the idea purely and their own lens on it, but they don't necessarily know. I mean, you have a half hour meeting with them. They don't necessarily know you or your founding team at the level that I do. And it's hard to get all of that across in a short meeting. So I can't tell you for sure why. You know, I can also, when I get right into that victim archetypal energy, I feel like only 3% of capital goes to women. Like, this is such bullshit. But I don't think that really serves me either. Although that came up a lot during that time, I really felt a lot of kind of injustice and unfairness.
Bias, possibly?
I can't be sure. I don't know. All I know is only 3% of capital goes to women.
Less than 3%.
Yeah, less than 3%. So I can't be sure that that was a part of my journey, but at the same time, it's a part of all of our journeys. So,
have you met many female VCs?
I met some. Yeah, I did. But I know that after going down this path and learning a little bit more about the whole ecosystem, at some level, female-focused funds and female VCs also have trouble attracting capital to then go and invest. So they're also fundraising. VCs are always fundraising to build their funds to go and invest in companies. And the problem is systemic. So even female VCs are also having trouble raising funds and closing funds at some level,
because they're experiencing the same bias as female founders.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sad. I don't want to close this interview on such a sad note.
Yeah. And we don't know and we can never be sure. And I think the most important thing is that I don't embody that energy and that I keep showing up, and that we as women just keep showing up and being all of who we can be, all of our bringing all of our magic, and knowing that the world, it is evolving, it is shifting, and it has changed. And I thank every single day every woman who's walked before me, because 50 years ago it was different, and 100 years ago it was really different, and 1,000 years ago it was really, really different to be a woman. So there's a lot of gratitude for where we are now, and a lot of reverence and respect I have for, like, the position we're in now and what we want to bring forward. So just got to keep showing up.
I need to come up with a nice closing.
It is just a really exciting time, because remote work is breaking down all sorts of barriers, all sorts of unconscious biases. Every single day, my team is 22 people from 15 countries all around the world. And that in itself, like, the level of diversity and inclusion that we can welcome into our teams when we work globally and remotely, whether it's gender, skin color, like, all sorts of things. It's really wild how when I'm just sitting across the computer screen from you, I don't have the same biases that I have when I'm putting all my judgments of the city that I live in and who you are within that city. It's really fascinating and it's hard to put into words, but I see in the companies that open up and hire globally and remotely, just this real connection with humanity that, like, at some level, we're all the same, no matter what our color, skin color, what our gender, what our sexual preferences, like, whatever it might be, that there has been so much division around in the past. All of a sudden, we're connected. And with all the different things that are going on in the world right now, like, I get to live the real stories. You know, I'm not living the news feed, which is a narrative that the country I live in is telling me, but I'm living, you know, Theodora, my head of brand, is hosting Ukrainian refugees in her home. And I'm talking with her in the morning, having our meeting, and she's like helping the woman with the little two-year-old girl get some medical care that's needed. Like, that's real. And that's what's really happening in the world. And that touches me so much more deeply than just seeing what's on the news. I don't watch the news, by the way, but I think you understand.
I do.
Everyone understands what I'm saying. Like, this is what really excites me about remote work. It's the opportunity for us to unpack these biases that we all have and let them go and open up to the fact that we are all human beings walking around on a single planet. And at the core, we all desire to be seen, to be worthy, to be valued, and to contribute.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Daria. It's great.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this show, share it with friends. Subscribe to our feed on Apple Podcasts or in your podcast app to never miss a new episode. Leave a review in the app you use. Reviews help us to get better and let more people discover this podcast. For updates, follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Telegram